All right, I admit my brain's a little melty today. Just right out of the gate. So if I accidentally say that I believe in God, don't believe me. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. With me today, as usual, is Mike. Hey.
Hey.
And Becky, how you doing?
Fine, thanks.
All right, so we've got some emails. The first one here is going to be an interesting one, as we... As I'm sure we're all completely sick of hearing about, election season is upon us.
Yay.
Yay. But, So this comes to us from Jonathan in Utah, and he writes, I was cruising GovTrack to look for bills that strike my fancy and found this gem. Apparently, it's one of those bills that keeps coming up time and time again. How many bills are like this, and why do they keep at it? Moreover, is it not a waste of time when it fails this bad? We could be spending that time on, oh, I don't know, the economic depression?
And what bill is this, Sam?
This was, it's actually an older bill. It's a 2009 bill. It's a House Resolution 253. Strangely enough, affirming the rich spiritual and religious history of our nation's founding and subsequent history, dot, dot, dot. Like most laws, the name of this law goes on for about six paragraphs. So so it goes, it declares that you guys speak up whenever you have something to say. It declares that the House of Representatives, one, affirmed the rich spiritual and diverse religious history of our nation's founding and subsequent history, including up to the current day.
I think definitely the diverse religious history and subsequent history is, you know, it's there. I don't know why it needs affirming.
Yeah.
It's like saying history happened.
Yeah. Let us affirm that oxygen is what we need to breathe. Two, recognizes that religious foundations of faith on which America was built are critical underpinnings of our nation's most valuable institutions.
False.
Yeah, not true.
Not so hot on that one myself.
Right, exactly. Three, rejects any effort to remove, obscure, or omit such history from public buildings and educational resources.
Yeah, this is not about education. This is about I want to put my Jesus ownership stamp thump, on the front of the Capitol building.
Yeah, and four, expresses support for the designation of an America's Spiritual Heritage Week.
Well, let's look at some of the things that are involved in American spiritual heritage. They talked about diversity.
Yeah, so
but I don't think they really want it.
Jonestown.
Yeah.
That's American.
Also, the Nation of Islam.
Yeah. Scientology.
Scientology is an American faith.
Yeah.
That's part of our wonderful, I guess you could say, the fabric of the quilt of the many...
The Raelians are French, though, right?
I believe so. He was a French race car driver who founded his UFO cult.
Yeah.
So
well, the UFO cults are a big part of the American spiritual heritage. Apparently, Bigfoot, I learned from our recent episode, is now his dimensional travels are now a part of America's spiritual heritage.
David Koresh
is part of
Terry Jones.
Yeah, well, the Unabomber in a way.
I want to know really what week would America's spiritual heritage week straddle?
I'd say the week that has April Fools, but somebody already did that joke to us. So hey, I mean that was originally that's one of the I think our finest moments in the atheism community is when somebody said there needs to be an atheism pride day or something like that, and then some religious person suggested, oh, I don't know, April 1st for April Fool's Day, and we're like, challenge accepted.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
So that's what, again, this is, these people are, they use a lot of language in here that they really don't mean.
Yeah.
Every time they really want to do, like, a bill that says, we don't want you to have the ability to take, you know, this Jesus statue off the front of the courthouse or the Ten Commandments monument down. They put in words like diversity, which is basically legal ass covering.
Right.
But then when somebody actually takes advantage of something like that,
mm-hmm.
These are the first people to flip their wig and probably just start spitting sand in all directions.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, so these laws come up every now and again, as Jonathan points out. And
every year.
Almost every year. There's usually at least one... I mean, this is really the religious politicians trying to reach their religious audiences, right? Saying, I vote for me, I'm a Christian, basically.
It's political theater. They know that it's not going to pass. Why do they keep doing it, that Jonathan asks, if they just fail all the time? Because they don't fail. They fail to pass, but they don't fail to do the thing they were designed to do, which is not pass as legislation, but to send a message to a certain kind of voter that this legislator is on your side on the whole, I want Jesus stamped on everything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's that dominionist arm, it's that dominionist sort of stripe that goes throughout American politics that says America is a Christian nation when it's not.
The federal marriage amendment a couple of years ago was the exact same thing. They knew that it would not pass. But it was never about passing. It was about putting yourselves publicly on a certain side of an issue and letting voters see it.
Well, what's really interesting here is that the sort of third little aspect of this, rejecting any effort to remove, obscure, or omit such history, meaning the diversity of religious heritage, from public buildings or educational resources.
Right.
That's like saying, you know, well, we can't have, it's the age-old argument of we can't have Ten Commandments at our courthouse because it's not about our history, this is about establishment of religion. Every time someone would say, hey, let's pull the Ten Commandments, someone would say, no, but it's part of our history, and we have a law saying protect our history.
Yeah, yeah. So, continuing the theme of American politics, it is important to note that Monday, that is tomorrow, is the last day to register for vote in Washington State. So check your voter registration at the Washington State Secretary of State website. There's a bunch of websites online that you can find that will tell you that if you're a currently registered voter or not, make sure they're legit before you go there. Because, you know, that'd be a prime fishing candidate right there. Voting in Washington State, I'll be honest with you, I'm not a big fan of it. I do not like vote by mail. I don't.
You don't like vote by mail. You actually do like the act of voting.
Well, I don't like the act of voting. I think it's necessary to vote. I mean, but no, I do like voting, but I don't like the ballot by mail.
There's something really fun of going to an election polling place and getting inside your little booth and waiting in line and then getting your sticker that says I voted. There's something sort of like an accomplishment there.
Well, I mean, are you a fan?
I'm not really somebody who has a real dog in the fight. I'm somewhat ambivalent. There's one thing that I do like about vote by mail, which is that it really gives me the time to take some real time with my ballot, then I know that when I go through a voter's pamphlet, sometimes it's hard to find out which judges, specifically at the lower level, I'm eligible to vote for.
Yeah.
Which small-time, like, county or municipal-level ballot initiatives I'm able to vote on. So when I have the ballot, I know what it is, then I can look that stuff, I can take my time, I can think.
Yeah, that's nice, but that's not something that's not covered by in places where we have polling places. Because what I do with the ballot, I used to do with the practice ballot. I mean, so I just, because you got, they, in Illinois at least, they mailed you what the ballot was going to look like before you went to vote, and you could go through it just like you could with any other, just like you do with the ballot here.
So, yeah, I'd love something like that, but I doubt that they'd pay for that. Sometimes they don't even want to pay for the voter's pamphlet in some counties.
They were paying for it before. But the thing is, and the thing that really bothers me about it is if, you know, this is maybe a little partisan, but it is something I'm concerned about, is how we vote in America. And if voter fraud is a concern, isn't vote by, I don't quite understand this, isn't vote by mail the more...
Vote by mail, it does guarantee a paper trail, so it has that on its side, but also it basically throws your ballot out into the ether where it can get lost, so I'll give you that. I don't know off the top of my head which side, whether voting at the polls or voting at the ballot would make it easier to commit voter fraud.
I think from what I did with computer security, it's just voting by mail and would create more points of failure. I don't know. It's weird. I just think voting, I wanted to bring it up because a lot of people don't realize that Washington State votes and Oregon vote differently than most of the rest of the country. And I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, in a weird sort of way, our election lasts like 2 weeks and we basically don't know. I mean, it's almost to the point where we can't even do exit polls here anymore because there is no poll to exit.
Exactly, exactly.
One of the interesting things, though, is that, yeah, there are different forms of voting all around the country. I mean, some states have polling location voting, but there's early voting. There's early balloting and a lot of absentee balloting. So there's all kinds of different ways in which people can get their vote. My personal opinion is the more ways in which you get a higher turnout, the better.
Yeah, the higher turnout is a definite plus to that. Is if you have a 3 week period in which to vote, you can vote at your leisure, and I would imagine that would create more, a better turnout. Has that statistically been the case?
I know that the voter turnout generally is better in the counties that had it versus those that don't, but I don't know if there's a history of that because I only looked at the one case because for the longest time it was most counties except for King and Pierce, which are the two most populous counties.
Right.
And the other ones tend to have a higher per capita voter turnout, but I don't know if that's the case because I wasn't looking against anything.
Okay. Well, very quickly, there is no official Ask an Atheist Poe show today because we're going to be going up to Seattle for the Flying Spaghetti Monster Dinner for Marriage Equality at the Old Spaghetti Factory in Seattle, hosted by Seattle Atheists. A friend of the... someone who's been on the show and friend of the show, Bob Seidensticker, is going to be talking at the event. So we'll see you guys up there at, I believe it's 5:30, 6 o'clock? 6:30. Okay. So now we're going to talk about something that we haven't really had in a while, not a new segment, but an old segment that we need to dust off and start talking about, and that would be Scripture Says
What?
So what do we have for us today?
Oh, we're going to go to a rather, I could say, volatile topic, and we're going to talk about the Quran.
All right.
This is from Quran 9, 5 through 6, and it says, "Kill the mushrikun." And I actually had to look that up, because the Quran is a lot like reading Dune, okay, where you have to constantly look at the glossary.
Right.
So, kill the mushrikun, and that means polytheists, atheists, pagans, idolaters, and disbelievers in the oneness of Allah.
All right.
So, kill them.
Right.
Whenever you find them, capture them, besiege them, and prepare for them each and every ambush. But if they repent and perform el-salat, which is the profession of Islamic faith, and give zakat, which is charity, then leave them their way free. Verily, Allah is oft forgiving and most merciful.
Okay, and that's where in that is that in the Quran again?
That one is in Quran, Surah, chapter 9, verse 5.
Okay, so do we need to remind people that we know that most people don't follow these quotes that we bring up? Like the very first one we did, where in the Bible it says if somebody grabs your junk, cut the hand off.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's a lot of really messed up stuff in these books,
yeah.
And the thing with religious moderation, and I'd say everyone who doesn't follow every bit is technically a religious moderate,
right,
is that it's really the practice of ignoring things that are in the books when they contradict your morality that has evolved in the centuries since these books were actually written.
Yeah.
So I don't think that most Muslims are going to go around killing people.
No.
However, it's a lie to pretend that this stuff isn't in the book.
Right.
That it isn't in there. I think it's more intellectually honest to admit that something is there and just say, yeah, we ignore that, rather than say, well, you know, we'd always meant that. And it's like, no, it doesn't.
Well, it goes back to what we said before, which is that we think that most religious people are better than their beliefs. I mean, and that's
certainly
what it is statistically speaking, most people don't go out and kill unbelievers, which means most people are better than religious books, where it says in all of these books, go kill the unbelievers.
Most fundamentalists are better than their holy books.
Yeah.
Like Fred Phelps, I've said this before, the Bible tells you to throw rocks at gay people until they're dead. It doesn't say to protest their funerals. So
yeah.
Technically, Fred Phelps is a liberal.
You heard it here on Ask an Atheist.
Wow. Okay. So, Mike, why don't you tell us about Peggy's challenge?
Yes. Peggy from Kent, a couple months ago, gave a challenge to Ask an Atheist listeners, asking them to support our show financially, because staying on the radio does cost money. So, a number of you have actually responded this week with a donation to our website.
So, we've got Scott from Langley in British Columbia in Canada, Jeffrey from South Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Radha from Mercer Island here in Washington.
So, if you're somebody who likes if you're listening to NPR a lot lately, you're hearing some version of this, but if you're someone who likes the sort of programming we have, because we are not a common thing on the radio dial, which is hearing things from a non-religious, non-theistic perspective, and you want to keep hearing something like this, you want the diversity on the radio, please go to our website, askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button on the right-hand side of the screen under the magical puffin, and please, as they say, give until it feels right.
Is it, so you said it's asking for money time on PBS?
It is a lot like that, except we don't have the sound of rotary phones going off behind us.
I could add that, if you'd like. So, a couple other things that Ask an Atheist is into right now. We're not thinking we're going to win, but we're still in the running for Best of Western Washington, Best Local Podcast.
Yes, we are in a, I guess you could say, strong third. We are the Ross Perot of this race.
Oh, man.
So, let me tell you something.
Takes a tough man to make a tender podcast. Wait, no, that's the Purdue guy.
At the very least, we can bring up a pie chart, perhaps, to explain why it's important to help us win this campaign.
Don't knock the pie charts. Pie charts are awesome.
Do a 30-minute documentary where I'm going to explain something to you folks, so I ask an atheist is going to have to win Best of Western Washington.
Wow. That may be the most political thing we've ever done. This is so, asking Nathan. Oh, wait, what's up?
No, so Best of Western Washington is something where, you know, we can get more visibility for the atheist viewpoint out there in the media, in lots of different kinds of media.
Yeah, and the thing is everybody's like, well, you know, people have been talking about it, and they're like, well, why are you voting for this? And the reason why we think it's important, the reason why we've been doing Best of Western Washington, is because it really gets the atheism visibility movement out there where people can see it. And that's really the prime purpose to this for me, as far as I'm concerned.
Yep, the winner appears on the local NBC affiliate, KingTV, and we get like a 2-minute thing saying, hey, you guys won Best of Western Washington, best local podcast. And that's worth like 50 billboards.
It is.
A lot of people will see that.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to go to the break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Herb Silverman about his new book.
So, picking up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
Billy, I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
This November in Washington State, we have an opportunity to strike a blow against religious privilege and become the first state to legalize marriage equality by a majority of voters.
Some people might be confused about why we're asking you to vote to approve Referendum 74. I mean, didn't the people opposed to equal rights get this on the ballot? Well, yeah, they did.
When the Washington State Legislature passed marriage equality earlier this year and Governor Greg Warr signed it, the religious right challenged that law.
Now we are the legislature.
When you vote to approve Referendum 74, you are voting to approve the exact same bill the legislature passed.
We believe that real religious liberty means a secular government that respects diversity where no one's religious ideology is imposed on anyone through the force of law.
Vote to approve extending equality and respect to all Washington families. Vote to approve Referendum 74 this November 6th.
To help make it happen, donate to Washington United for Marriage through the Ask an Atheist team page.
Go to askanatheist.tv/r74.
We're the producers of Ask an Atheist.
And we pay for this ad.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480.
Thanks, Sam. We're back here, and we're going to be speaking with Herb Silverman. He's the founder and president of the Secular Coalition for America, and he's the Distinguished Professor Emeritus of Mathematics at the College of Charleston. He ran for governor of South Carolina in the 1990s as an atheist who entered into a multi-year battle to have the South Carolina Supreme Court strike down the religious requirement for holding public office. And he joins us today to chat about his recently published memoir, Candidate Without a Prayer, an autobiography of a Jewish atheist in the Bible Belt. Are you with us today, Herb?
Yes, I am.
So glad to have you here today.
Happy to be here.
Excellent. So, you know, the Supreme Court ruled against barring non-believers from public office all the way back in 1961 with the Torcaso v. Watkins. When this legal precedent is decades old, I mean, nearly, you know, half a century, why do you think it took so long for South Carolina to reaffirm that decision from way back in the Kennedy administration?
Well, the wheels of justice move slowly in South Carolina. What they were exerting, the same thing they did during the Civil War, was our state's rights, because the South Carolina state constitution barred atheists from holding public office. Never mind what the U.S. Constitution said about no religious test for public office.
So if the laws are really unenforceable, you know, if the Supreme Court says that this is something that, you know, the Supreme Court governs and not state laws, you know, not state constitutions, if they're really unenforceable, why do people fight so hard to defend them? And why did South Carolina fight so hard to defend this law in their books?
You know, well, initially when I saw this, I went to the ACLU asking how this obviously unconstitutional provision could be changed, thinking that when people saw that this was on the books, they'd say, of course, that's not enforceable. But when our lawyer talked to state officials, they said, as far as they were concerned, they were going to follow our state constitution that barred atheists. So that's why something I thought would be a 15-minute battle wound up taking 7 years. And eventually I won in the South Carolina Supreme Court that essentially said no religious tests for public office. And that was something that I think state officials understood, but they'd rather play to the religious right here in South Carolina than do the right thing.
One thing I'm curious about is, since you've gotten that struck off the state constitution in South Carolina, have there been any other atheists showing up in on the ballots?
Well, I'm sure there have been atheists on the ballot for decades, but not open atheists. And that's part of our mission, to not only have atheists run for office, but have them run openly. And the problem is, at this point, yes, atheists can run openly for public office and not be challenged by it. The question is, what are their chances of winning? And unfortunately, their chances of winning now are about what it would have been for an African-American in South Carolina to win 50 years ago. Now they can win, and I'm hoping in even less than 50 years, we're going to have atheists being able to hold office in all states, including South Carolina.
So, Herb, I noticed that in a recent issue of the Washington Post, a columnist, Sally Quinn, who writes for the On Faith section of the paper, had this to say: "This is a religious country. Part of claiming your citizenship is claiming a belief in God, even if you were not a Christian. We've got a creator in our Declaration of Independence. We've got In God We Trust on our coins. We've got One Nation Under God in our Pledge of Allegiance. And we say prayers in the Senate and the House of Representatives to God." So when you hear statements like this, how far do you think we are from getting to that point where we can win public office?
Well, I've also written for that On Faith column and expressed my views and even communicated with Sally Quinn, who I think is a lot more reasonable than what you sounded like in that article. to try to put the best positive spin on what she said, she might have been saying that politicians need to be hypocrites if they have a chance of winning. So with all of this religiosity going around, their best tactics are to profess belief in a deity.
So
both Republicans and Democrats.
It stopped being about a personal statement of faith and turned into playing the game. Don't hate the player, hate the game, basically.
Yeah, I think that she's not saying outright that she is a believer of that sort. She used to call herself an agnostic. Now I think she calls herself spiritual, whatever that means. But I don't think it means a belief in a traditional God. But like all public figures, they want, I assume, to be popular. And maybe if she just came out and said, hey, this is God belief is nonsense, she would be hurt in her position, even though she is a leader at the Washington Post. But they're all concerned about how they're perceived.
So you grew up in a traditional Jewish household with a distinct sense of separation from the mainstream Christian substrate. Do you think that familiarity with being a non-Christian helped you as a candidate, as a professor, or in a deeply Christian environment?
I grew up as an Orthodox Jew, and I recognized that I was a minority then, and I knew a lot of Jews back then who wanted to stay in the closet as Jews. Some even changed their names. And even when I stopped believing in any gods, I didn't feel like I wanted to hide the fact that I'm a Jew. So I would come out of the closet as much as possible on just about all things. And that's what we're trying to do for the atheist movement, the same as for the LGBT movement, that we should acknowledge who we are. Just be honest that we should have freedom of conscience for all people and the courage to come out with who you are.
It seems like you're prescribing the exact opposite of what Sally Quinn is saying, where she's saying to sort of steer into the cultural bigotry, and you're saying that it's more necessary for us to change it, that actually to fight the wave and redirect it.
Yeah, if we steer into the cultural bigotry, then we lose ground. We acknowledge that that kind of bigotry is mainstream and acceptable. If the LGBT movement just said, hey, let's be quiet about being gay because it'll offend some people, where would they be today?
So I think that's a really good point. So was hatching your plan to run for high office in the state of, you know, of South Carolina, was that your best approach to it? Do you think that you'd do it again, or was that really your whole point in hatching that plan?
Well, I'm happy it happened, but that was not at all my plan. I just saw this quirky thing in our South Carolina Constitution, and I thought I would not even run for governor. It was only when the ACLU lawyer said that someone would have to mount a legal challenge by running for governor, an atheist would have to do that, and I didn't know any other atheists who would be willing to do that, so I decided I would become that candidate. And I just didn't know it would get the kind of publicity that it would get, not only in South Carolina, where I got a lot of hate mail, but the Associated Press picked it up, and it became a national story.
Well, so, you know, you had written that on some radio shows, there were some Christian conservative callers that asked you if you worshipped Satan, since clearly you had to believe in something. So,
right.
Dr. Silverman, do you worship Satan?
Well, I have to continually explain to some of these Christian callers that I don't believe in any deities, and the only people that are concerned with Satan are those who are Christians and some people in other religions as well. But it's a good feeling to not have to be concerned with any imaginary gods, of which I include Satan, Yahweh, and about 700 others.
This actually, it ties into something that I used to pay a lot of attention to because I lived in the Midwest, and this party actually had a pretty big appearance there. But you were once tempted to affiliate with the Natural Law Party because the platform purported to be science-based. How long did that end up lasting?
Well, what happened is, you know, when I was watching these candidates running for public office, and all of them would end with, and God bless you and God bless America, I kiddingly, or at least half kiddingly, said, I'm going to vote for the first candidate who doesn't end his speech that way.
Oh,
and then I heard a presidential candidate for the Natural Law Party talk about his science-based platform, and he didn't mention God, so I thought, hey, this sounds good. And I looked up the Natural Law Party, and on its website, it did talk about science. So I sent in a $25 contribution just to encourage them. And about a week later, I got a call, because I guess they didn't get many contributions, asking them if I'd be willing to become a candidate. And they were, and I explained that I had been a candidate for governor and explained why. And I was invited to their little gathering in North Carolina. I'm living in South Carolina.
Right.
Just to see if I would be interested. And I talked to the presidential and vice presidential candidate, neither of whom were upset by my being an atheist. So I thought, maybe this is the party for me. until I heard a little further what they were about.
Yeah.
They and most of the people there were graduates of Maharishi University. And
right. That's
they didn't have any god, but the Maharishi was about as close to a god as you could come from the way they were talking.
Was the candidate Hagelin?
Yes.
Yeah. So the thing about the Natural Law Party.
He's a physicist also.
Yeah, he is a physicist. But the thing about the Natural Law Party and the reason I paid attention to them with my my interest in fun things like this is that one of their party platforms was a military trained corps of transcendental meditationalists who would be deployed to go meditate in places where the military would normally be used. That this was a party basically run by Maharishi University, right?
So basically,
yes, I found that out later. When they talk about scientifically based, I think they invent their own science that they talk about the scientifically verified transcendental meditation that apparently they think could do just about anything, including bring about world peace by having them meditate. Now, I agree that if people were to meditate instead of go to war, then we might have world peace, but that's not what he meant by it.
And it sounded like he wanted to go to war with meditation, too. So it seemed like it was kind of a...
I have nothing against people personally meditating. I just don't agree with the kind of science that the Natural Law Party was talking about. I even asked them about, the scientists that I think have been great scientists are people like Einstein, Hawking, Feynman. And I said, but they have made mistakes, and they've acknowledged mistakes. Has the Maharishi, Mahesh Yogi, ever made a mistake that you know of, or can you find any mistakes? And nobody there could find a mistake of Maharishi. That's when I decided that they were just worshiping him as a deity. And I decided that, no, the Natural Law Party is not for me. Although I did like the fact that they did not talk about God, so that at least distinguished them in running for office from the mainstream parties.
So would you encourage others to follow in your stead and test these religious affirmation laws in the states that reclaim them? Because I know after you ran for the gubernatorial office, you actually ran... you tried for a notary public, and so this is definitely a theme for you. Would you suggest that other people do the same, and what sort of path would you suggest if you would?
Well, the notary public was just an extension of my gubernatorial race, because initially I saw our state constitution prohibited atheists from becoming governor. After I lost the election and a judge there had ruled that he would only rule on the merits of my case if I had won the election, I then saw that I was ineligible for any public office, and notary public would be the easiest one to get. So I just filled out my form and expected to get my notary public, which would, and if they granted me that, that would say that atheists can hold public office. And as far as I know, I'm the first person in the history of South Carolina to be rejected as a notary public after I sent in my fee.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So that's what the lawsuit was about.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, the Torcaso versus Maryland in 1961 was very similar, and the Supreme Court ruled the way the court ruled in my case. So that's really why I ran for notary public, to challenge our state constitution here. Now, I know other states do have these kind of laws still on the books, but most states don't try to enforce them like South Carolina did. And to me, more important than just challenging these laws that nobody pays attention to, or hardly anybody does, would be to mount legal good campaigns acknowledging being an atheist on the local level. Following the Christian Coalition tradition that made them successful, I disagree with everything they do, but they had a good strategy, running for local school boards, taking them over, and then getting their way in what I think are unconstitutional ways. And we need to fight them the same, using the same tactics, running locally and working to maintain a secular government. We have the law on our side, and we need to change some of the hearts and minds of people who think that atheists are somehow inherently immoral.
So you said that you specifically wanted to fight the law in South Carolina because it's actually enforced in South Carolina. In some states, they have these on the books, but they're basically symbolic at that point. Would you suggest that people still challenge those laws?
Yeah, I would at least want to see a governor or attorney general in these states have something in the books that, this law is no longer enforceable. I remember when I was living in Massachusetts, there was something in on the books that you can't kiss your wife in public on Sunday. And people just left it there because it was kind of a joke, and nobody thought it could possibly be enforceable. They didn't take it seriously like they do in South Carolina. So first find out if they take something seriously, and if not, then see that there's something written into the Constitution, even if it's a footnote saying that this law is no longer applicable.
All right. Well, we need to go into the break. Please stick with us, Herb. We're going to gotta definitely have some more questions for you. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back, we're going to finish up our interview with Herb Silverman here, who's wrote a book about his gubernatorial campaign. And we're also going to talk about what's up with blasphemy this week. Hey, this is Sam with a quick announcement before the podcast goes out. The Richard Dawkins Foundation is having a private fundraiser in Portland on the same weekend as the FFRF convention, and that would be this Saturday, October 13th, at 4 p.m. at a venue in Portland. For more information, go to richarddawkins.net.
Looking to sell or buy a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, and surrounding areas? Plant your roots and invest in this entrepreneur-friendly area with world-class education and healthcare. Demand a professional and call Dawn Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 and let him work with you to achieve your goals, save your time, and protect your investment. Contact Dawn Summers of Professional Realty Group at dndrealty.ca. It's time you hired a professional.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
Seattle Atheists educates the public about atheism and serves as a gathering ground for atheists in the Seattle area. Check out some of their fantastic upcoming events.
Hina Dadaboy is a writer with Skeptic and the only atheist in her Muslim family. Seattle Atheists welcomes Hina Sunday, October 14th at 4 p.m. at the University of Washington in Kane Hall. She'll share what it's like becoming an atheist in an American Muslim family, and she'll talk about her upcoming book, A Skeptic's Guide to Islam.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you. SeattleAtheists.org.
So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
All right, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules, a variation on our usual fantasy campaign system. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shape-shifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, as well as a listing of other products and to get involved in the community forums.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480, and we're continuing our conversation with Herb Silverman.
Yeah, thanks so much. Herb Silverman, you know, you started out as a math professor. You evolved to political activist and then community organization leader. What was it like spinning up the Secular Coalition for America?
Well, you know, I started life as an apathetic atheist until I moved to South Carolina, and that's when I became an activist atheist. When I'd get the hate mail from people, I'd also hear from others in South Carolina saying how happy they were I was doing that because they thought I was the only atheist in South Carolina. So I helped form a local group, the Secular Humanists of the Low Country, helped form a group at the College of Charleston where I was teaching, the Atheist Humanist Alliance, and then started hearing about national groups as well. And I saw that they were all kind of doing their own thing without having much effect in our culture. So that's when I gradually persuaded some of them to stop arguing about the 5% that sets them apart and cooperate on the 95% they have in common to make a difference in our culture. And the Secular Coalition for America now has 11 national non-theistic organizations, and we organized as a group that can do unlimited lobbying. So we're trying to make a difference in our country, as well as now we're forming 50 state secular coalitions, so we will be able to lobby members of Congress not only in D.C., but in all of the states.
So when you've been lobbying Congress, what's the response been so far?
It's been polite. Mostly we lobby and try to prevent some of the legislation that the religious right is promoting with moderate success. Privately, in fact, we know there are at least 28 members of Congress who are atheists, or at least non-theists, but only one is out of the closet, and that's Pete Stark from California. We're trying to, again, make non-theism respectable in our culture.
So
and I think once we organize better than we have, and I've heard many times that trying to get free thinkers to cooperate is like herding cats, but we've been reasonably successful in that. And no matter how good our lobbyists might be, it's more effective if somebody can go into a member of Congress's office and say, look, we have these 200 people, here are their names, in your district who are looking at this legislation. We care about separation of church and state. We don't want us to creep toward a theocracy. Then they're more likely to listen to us when we show we have the numbers behind them, because many smaller groups are more have been more effective in lobbying because they've had their members look out for specific issues.
So, Herb, I'm curious. I've heard the 28 non-theists in Congress number quite a bit, and I'm not going to ask you to out these people. But
we're not in the outing business.
So I'm curious, though. It seemed like they would have to volunteer that to you privately. It seems like that would be something that a politician in this kind of environment wouldn't want anyone to know, because as quick as it's out of their mouth, it's all over the Internet. How did you get people to admit that stuff to you? Were they forthcoming with that, or did you ask?
Well, a lot of the credit comes to somebody who's chair of our advisory board, Woody Kaplan, who for decades has been a lobbyist and worked with the ACLU, helping members of Congress raise money. And in the past, they'd be talking about issues important to the ACLU, and non-theism also often comes up because of the religious right. So in a friendship basis, we've heard about some of these people, and their voting records are good on separation of church and state. And it's not the least surprising, considering there are over 15% in our country who don't believe in any gods, and among the educated, that percentage is even higher. And members of Congress, whatever you think of them, have been pretty well educated, and they just feel the need at this point to be in the closet about their religious beliefs, or even worse, tell people the opposite of what they believe, because they feel that's needed for re-election. And we're trying to change our culture so that they can more comfortably
talk about what they do believe.
But 28 people in a group of 500, that's hardly representational yet, so we do have a ways to go.
Yeah, even well, with the hides
well, you,
of hiding.
You would probably guess for every person who's acknowledged not believing in a God, there's many more who won't acknowledge. And some have just said, you know, I don't want to talk about religion. That's not what politics should be about. And in a lot of ways, they're right. Unfortunately, those who talk about religion talk about how deep their faith in Jesus is and why the earth is 6,000 years old.
So you've got a book out. What's the name of that book, Becky?
Candidate Without a Prayer, an autobiography of a Jewish atheist in the Bible Belt.
Well, if that's not provocative, I don't know what is.
So if we want to find this book, where would we go find it?
Oh, you could look on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. You know, I've been also involved with coalitions. So I even have a coalition of publishers. Pitchstone Publishing has the hard copy, and the Humanist Press has... This is their first e-book that they've put out, so that's where the e-book version of it is.
Oh.
I'm pleased that there's a nice foreword to the book by Richard Dawkins.
Oh, very good. Yeah, that is sort of a leading question. There is a link to the Amazon page for the hardcover version of the book on your website, so I'll look forward to it.
Okay, well, I hope you and many others get to talk about it, and I'd be happy to... answer any questions you have after reading it.
All right. I absolutely will have a few.
I hope you enjoy it, because it's not all about my atheism. It is an autobiography, so I talk about my upbringing and how I gradually switched to atheism and what would happen after that. And it should, at least people have told me, it's a fun read.
Very, very good. Herb Silverman is the author of Candidate Without a Prayer, an autobiography of a Jewish atheist in the Bible Belt. He is also the founder and president of the Secular Coalition for America and is the distinguished professor emeritus of the mathematics at the College of Charleston. Thank you very much, Herb.
Thank you. I enjoyed our conversation.
I did, too. Talk to you soon.
Great. Thank you.
I do like the conversations we have on the show. We got some great folks on the show. And, you know, just like we were saying before... This is an amazing community we have here in the atheism community, and we have this new thing that we opened up last week about blasphemy, and we told we were going to making a segment out of this, and the working title of the segment is "And the Horse You Rode In On."
Yes, and if you know the pretext to that, then you know exactly what we're going for.
Yeah. So last month, a 27-year-old atheism activist and computer science graduate named Albert Saber was arrested in Cairo for doing what we do on Ask an Atheist every week. He disrespected and criticized religious beliefs and their political influence. He posted the controversial Innocence of Muslims video on his Egyptian Atheist Facebook page, along with other posts and videos promoting atheism and criticizing Islam. When word of this got out, an angry mob formed outside of Saber's apartment, where he could hear them calling him an infidel and debating whether to storm in and murder him. Police were called, and they promptly arrested Saber, not the mob. Human rights lawyers say Saber was arrested without a prosecutor's warrant and that he was beaten during interrogation. When tossed into a cell with other inmates, the guard announced that he had insulted the Muslim prophet Muhammad. He later sustained a wound on his neck in the cell. He awaits trial on charges of disdaining religion and ridiculing religious beliefs and rituals.
Yeah, this is what we were talking about a couple weeks ago, which is the greater call for blasphemy laws, that we need to protect our beliefs through force of law. And who are the victims? People like us.
Yeah.
That under the code of context that Albert Saber lives under... our show would be illegal.
Yeah. I mean, that's something we need to point out, because this is a common trope among religious people, is that they say that Christians are being persecuted, and they lump themselves in with the Christians who are being persecuted in Islamic states. We live in the Pacific Northwest. We're relatively lucky about what we can talk about. Nobody's going to arrest us for doing this show. He's not so lucky in Cairo.
Yeah,
and we are not him.
Yeah, you American Christians are not the Coptic Christians living in Egypt right now.
No.
Your equivalent are the people who locked up Albert Saber.
Yeah.
And the only reason you're not locking us up is that our laws don't let you. Is that you have had those abilities, the ability to lock up, to jail, to brutalize people like us taken from you over long, bloody centuries.
Yeah.
And thank goodness. So that really gets back to one thing that I get out of this thing from Albert Sabre, is that when they threw him into that jail cell, they said, this is a man who insulted our prophet.
Right.
What do you think that they wanted the people in that cell to know that for?
Yeah, exactly.
They knew that. They want him brutalized. So when he had that gash in his neck...
I didn't get that. They actually were announcing this as they were walking him into the holding cell?
They announced this to the other people in the cell.
Yeah.
This man insulted our prophet. In you go.
Yeah. If that happened in Washington State, It would end that police department.
It's equivalent to saying, this guy's a child molester. Have at it, fellas.
Yeah.
That's what they want to happen. So when the mob shows up and the mob wants to kill, and then the cops show up and then they arrest the free speech advocate, what message does that send? That sends the message that we are ratifying what that mob was calling for. We're ratifying the call to violence. And what do we do when we say, hey, this guy insulted the prophet? We're ratifying the violence, the state is, that they do to him in that cell.
Yeah.
And when he has a gash in his neck and he's beaten during interrogations, we are basically saying, you deserve to be beaten to scare you out of exercising free speech that we don't like.
So this is really, really frightening. And it's just another one on that list of things that we opened up with last week about, you know, blasphemy laws. This is not just Muslim innocence and the response to that horrible troll video. The blasphemy thing is going on everywhere, not just in... It happens a lot in Muslim nations. We have to admit that. But it happens everywhere. It happens in Uganda. It happens in Poland. It happens in some places in the United States. But
happens in Ireland.
Happens in Ireland. It happens all over the place. But this is a particularly difficult one, because somebody just spoke his mind on a blog like you do, and then a mob formed out of his house, and the cop showed up not to protect him, but to arrest him. What can we do as a community?
Well, what we can do is we can speak out. And we're not the first people to do this either. Hemet Mehta over Friendly Atheist has created a post about this, and he's raising awareness. Rebecca Watson, whatever our differences are on some things,
right,
we are in lockstep with her on this. She has created a petition on change.org calling for his release. So you will find a link to that on our website. Sign it. Go to the AHA website, American Humanist Association, which we have also linked to.
Yeah.
They have created a way to contact the State Department to demand that we take action to create pressure on Egypt to release this guy.
You can say what you like about change.org and whether or not it works, but it gets the visibility out there, and that's important. But something that you just mentioned that I think we should all follow up on is that there is a way to contact the State Department. Get online with you, get on the phone with people in the government who can do something about it. Make calls. Make noise. This is how the word gets out.
Exactly. And then we can't go in there and rip him out of prison, but what we can do is also contact our congressman. And I also linked a link on the website. Contact your member of Congress. Say you want to do something about this. Remember with the Uganda Kill the Gay bills that came out a couple of years ago? There was a United States Congress resolution condemning that, and we created a lot of international pressure.
Yeah.
And the people who forwarded that bill started backpedaling really quickly.
Yeah.
International pressure does have an effect, and we can create that for this guy, because if we get down to it, as atheists, we don't have a people in the sense that we're not an ethnicity, we're not a religion, but this guy's one of us. So if you have a blog about atheism, a community organization about atheism, a radio show like us, you have a website, a podcast, this is one of our own. This is somebody who does exactly what all of us do every day, and he does it with this sort of Damocles hanging over his head. He does it with a great sense of bravery, because he does not have the cultural freedoms and legal protections that we often take for granted.
But, you know, even in the so-called Western countries, that cultural heritage that we take for granted, you can't always count on. I mean, we just had a conversation with somebody who really should have been able to point to that cultural heritage of secularism in this country and say, yeah, I can run for office. We have the First Amendment. We have the wording of the Treaty of Tripoli, which is odd. And we also, you know, we have this amazing heritage that actually in many ways began in Poland, which is a place where there are blasphemy laws now. If you follow the, you know, through William Penn and a bunch of other places, it got this, some of this, the philosophical underpinnings got its start there. But here we go. We got these blasphemy laws in places like Poland and places like Ireland. And we mentioned Ireland because we're going to be having somebody on soon to talk about the blasphemy laws in Ireland and the effect it's had on speech there.
Exactly. And like we said about these sorts of places, even though culturally you may have a difference and you have the law on the other hand, like Herb Silverman, thankfully, wasn't thrown into a cell and said, hey, by the way, this guy's an atheist.
Yeah.
And those legal protections do give you something there. And, of course, it took him years to get this fought over in the courts, but he won. For Albert Sabre, the law's against him.
Yeah, so we are going to have somebody from Atheist Ireland, right?
Yes, we're going to be welcoming Michael Nugent in a few weeks, who's chair of Atheist Ireland, and also speaks throughout Europe on the effects of blasphemy laws, both in Ireland and worldwide.
Yeah, so that... This is something, this is important to us. This is important to Ask an Atheist. These blasphemy laws prevent the atheism visibility movement from being what it can be internationally. This is the this is a very large part of the battle that we fight. And this is something that we have to focus on as a community.
Absolutely.
So let's do a couple of very quick emails. First comes to us from Andrew in Lanham, Maryland, and he writes, I just thought I'd mention that Eric Hovind, son and successor of the infamous Kent Hovind, will be making an appearance in Vancouver, Washington, and Portland, Oregon in November. If you know anyone who's a fan of Concentrated Crazy and doesn't mind schlepping all the way over to Portland, you may want to pass it along. From what I've seen, the Hovinds don't visit the Northwest very often.
The son of convicted felon Kent Hovind?
Yes, the son of convicted felon Kent Hovind.
Hey, don't visit the sins of the father upon the son.
You can visit the sins of the father upon the son when they commit basically the same sins. This guy, the Hovind the Younger's presentation on creationism and the errors of evolution is pretty much word for word Hovind the Elder's presentation. He just can't give it because he's in jail. And if you go to wecantknow.com, that old website where we're counting down to the day after the apocalypse, there's a series of clocks there, which are counting down to the end of the world, one of which is the release date for Kent Hovind.
So he can come on out and show us all those Jesus-based prison tats that he has.
Yeah, Kent Hovind is a very interesting individual. I have a copy of, I think we all have a copy of Kent Hovind's seminars on evolution. This is how I actually discovered Potholer 54, probably my favorite YouTuber, is his takedowns of Kent Hovind's logic behind carbon dating and all of the other things. So definitely check those out. If you like crazy, if you like it when we talk about North Korea, do check out Kent Hovind. He's a very, very strange individual. So, have you seen any of the Kent Hovind stuff?
I have, and I know that I'm putting Becky on the spot right now, but Becky actually...
I can't watch it because it's someone claiming to be an educator and a teacher.
Yeah, but Becky, you do a great impression of Kent Hovind.
With the lies in the textbook, yeah. I'm not going to be doing it here.
She gets mad at me because I'll be, you know, kind of tired and I'll play a Kent Hovind thing because I just want to see something crazy. And go, you're listening to that again? Stop it. So that's all the time we've got for today. Brian in Seattle, the extended Camp Quest episode is coming. I am very sorry. It's been a weird week. This is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam. With me today was Rebecca and Mike. Our special guest was Herb Silverman. Music, as usual, is by Chris Coleman. My production assistant was Darren Garvin. Post show is at the Old Spaghetti Factory. See you next week.
Clay Radio, your conversation station. KLAY Lakewood, Tacoma, on 1180 AM.